Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. And we explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, spiritual, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. My name is Tom Tutel Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And in March of 2012, I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker at that event. I'm also speaking at the upcoming Think and Grow Rich Summit in Del Mar, California, in late April. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced. And I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1", and that's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. Find out more about me at my website. It's tall.com. My guest today is the amazing Dr. Molly Marty. And Dr. Marty is a performance psychologist and founder of bestlifedesign.com, which is a life design resource that provides tools, advice, and inspiration in all areas of life design, including health, fitness, relationships, finances, career, spirituality, and success. As a psychologist, lawyer, and trained mediator, Dr. Molly has years of experience in conflict resolution, negotiation, facilitation, group dynamics, team building, and many more interesting skills. She's a successful entrepreneur. She's a coach with a prestigious list of clients, including Olympians and business superstars. And she's widely published in academic journals. She also shares her work in peak performance and success in her books. And we're going to talk about her newest book today, Walking with Justice. Welcome to the show today, Dr. Molly.
Thank you, Tom. I really enjoyed hearing a bit about your background at the front end.
Yes, and not only with those great things in your bio, but I also understand at some point during this amazingly successful career, you were hit with a disability, with one of those challenges in life, right?
Yes, I've had several, but I write about one of them in my latest book, Walking with Justice. I had a heart virus that flattened me and had me fighting for my life here and there, and through that, at times, lost my ability to walk and to talk and even my vision. And so I have gone through some health challenges, and I say the gift wrap is still flying today. Some tremendous, tremendous good has come out of that experience for me.
Amen. And that's one of Napoleon Hill's success principles, is learning from adversity and defeat. And with all the reading I'm doing, I'm noticing that resiliency is a really key success tool and skill for people to have in this day and age. And you and I know well, we go through life and we have these challenges that come up unscheduled. They don't consult with us, and yet we still have to learn to make a positive impact in the world despite what it throws at us, right?
Certainly.
And so your work has been a lot with the performance psychologist, with some really top-notch people, some Olympians and highly successful business people. When you went through that, your challenge where you're fighting for even survival, what are some points that you've added to what you were already teaching before that that help people with that resilience? Because that is an important thing for people to develop.
Yes, up to that point, I had worked with a lot of elite performers, and I really enjoy both athletics and business. I have a fascination with human potential, so wherever there are humans, you have my interest already. What rose to the surface personally during that time was this book, Walking with Justice, because, you really do look at your regrets. These things kind of bubble up, and you think, oh, I can't leave without doing this and that. And a lot of those dynamics are around close relationships, is what I experienced. What I wanted with my husband, with my kids, with my personal relationships. But there was this also kind of creative bubbling. You know, what didn't I create that I was in a position to gift to this world? And that was Judge's love and lessons. And I, you know, walked by the side of this extraordinary man for 4 years, and I had learned so much. And he had already passed on. And I thought, if I leave this earth now, many of these lessons will just go with me. And so that's what came up to me and refocus. So actually, you know, through that experience, I had to let some things go. I don't consult and coach in many of the ways that I used to. One, to focus on Walking with Justice, and two, to focus on this community resiliency project, this new nonprofit that I'm now directing.
Yeah, what an amazing project, Community Resiliency Project. And all the profits from your new book, Walking with Justice, are helping to fund that project. So tell us more about Community Resiliency Project, how you got connected with it, and how is it connected to the book other than raising funds as well?
Sure. Yeah, there's a very intimate connection. When we talk resiliency, that could be a new word or a big word to some people, so I just want to define that up front. How I see resiliency is our capacity and strength to cope with, recover from, and to grow through adversity. So that's what we're talking about with resiliency. And the Community Resiliency Project started when our small town of 4,000 people in Iowa lost 3 teens to suicide within 6 months' time. It was a devastating, challenging time for us. And I actually had Walking with Justice in manuscript form at that time. There wasn't a connection to the project at all. And I came home from doing some of that work, and I picked up the manuscript to continue to edit it. And I opened up a chapter that I had written, of course, but it didn't feel like I had written it that day. And it was Judge talking about leadership. And he believed that leadership has nothing to do really with the leader. It doesn't have to do with wanting to be in charge. It has to do with serving. It has to do with looking at the needs right in front of you and asking, do I have something unique to help heal this situation? Do I have some experience or education or skills or connections? And when I'm reading these words and hearing Judge ask me this question, I couldn't not see that as a member of this community, a mother of 3 teens myself, as a resiliency researcher, and very well connected to people who already were knocking on my door saying, what can we do to help your, you know, these kids in your community? I knew that I needed to step forward and do the work. So that's where the project started. And then over time, additional towns nearby us in Iowa lost teens. It just in our state alone, we lose 30 kids a year to suicide, something I didn't know before. It came knocking on my door. And across the country, it's an epidemic. And so we have then formed a nonprofit, and I, like I said, agreed on volunteering as the CEO. Have a fantastic, experienced, passionate board in place directing where we're going. But it's about empowering communities to grow resilient youth and create an environment in which no life is lost to suicide.
I am reading so much about young people and suicide these days. Statistics are sad and shocking. The percentage of people who think about it, Dr. Molly, come on, I've suffered pain 24/7 since the age of 5. I'd be superhuman if at some point the thought doesn't come to your mind. And so these youth really, such a project to get to them before they get to that stinking thinking that leads them to that horrible end. And what an amazing project. It's going to help so many people. And probably even just with one life saved, it's worth all the work. But we're hoping for many lives saved from this book and from that project, right?
Oh, we are. And it's, you know, our model is called the EASY model, ECCE. It's a relationship-based model because that's what resilience shows. The number one factor, protective factor in these kids' life is having a caring, trusted adult. If they have 3 of these relationships in addition to their parents, it exponentially puts them on a path to success. So our EASY model give the steps of engage, connect, challenge, enrich. And we have a 20 factors within that, but all of the research, I basically have spent the last couple of years really digging in even more. It's already what I was doing with peak performers, but digging in as far as teens and as far as coping and what will really help protect and strengthen these kids.
Wow, I love that. So engage, connect, challenge, and enrich. I love something else. Three people other than their parents.
Yes.
We don't get to choose our parents, and the ideal is an amazingly great relationship like I had with mine, maybe you had with yours, but three outside people. There are people who are successful in life, positive, who can help people, and who want to help people. And so, yeah, if you can get three people from outside your family, because sometimes you get a little bit deaf to what your parents are telling you, and, you know, an outside mentor could tell you the same thing, that you think they're brilliant and your parents are crazy. So find three people, and there's so many people willing to mentor young people these days. Do you have any suggestions or ideas on how to go about finding these outside mentors?
We do, and we will continue to add tools to this, but we have a new campaign called the You Matter, We Need You campaign. And what our You Matter, We Need You campaign does, it really has kind of three tiers. One is it goes right to our educators, and it teaches them about suicide intervention and identifying warning signs, and but really that caring component as well. So we have teachers, for example, that are volunteering, and so many are doing that just to give up one of their lunch times to have, it's called the lunch bunch, and to have a bunch of kids come over to their room and have casual conversations, and, you know, without the pressure of being in a class and having to raise your hand, and it's just establishing those relationships. So we've done some training in this pilot community that includes the bus drivers and the lunch ladies and everybody in the school system, because that's a very natural place to look for some of these mentors. Then the second piece is going directly to the kids with this message of you matter, your life is significant, you're important, and that we see you and that we hear you and that we need you, that we need you in our community to identify your gifts and to strengthen them and to share them and to truly understand that that's what gives meaning to life is when you share. And so we provide a lot of opportunities, direct opportunities to these youth to be identifying their strengths and to be growing them and to have mentors that will support them in it. And then the third piece is going to our community and to mobilize our community to become those trusted adults in these kids' lives.
Wow, you have a really amazing process and system there. That's going to help so many people. Now, let's talk about your book, Walking with Justice. It's about your life's greatest mentor, Judge Max Rosen. My wife has been a paralegal for 18 years, for a criminal defense lawyer, and so I hear a lot of great stories about judges and justice of the peace and what great people they are. Tell me about Judge Max Rosen. How did he become your mentor? What made him so extraordinary? And maybe about some of the lessons you learned that are in the book as well.
Certainly, Judge, like you said, was my life's greatest mentor. He was an extraordinary man, a prominent federal judge on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. So his court was a federal court sitting directly under the U.S. Supreme Court. And he stood out for his legal reasoning and his passionate pursuit of justice, but also for his plain common sense and for the life he lived with such integrity and the respect he showed others and the way he walked with humility. To give you an idea of his influence, he actually went to work in a federal building, a U.S. courthouse that was renamed by the U.S. government in honor to his contributions to this country. So
wow.
He worked in the Max Rosen Federal Building in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And I was with him for 3 full years of a clerkship, so daily I had time with him. I practiced law there for another year, and I saw him frequently, and then we continued our friendship and his mentorship over the next 10 years when I moved back to Iowa. So I knew Judge very closely. And like I said, sometimes you struggle with words to describe the man, because even his colleagues just called him a judge's judge, and I have one chapter in there where the judges are talking about the impact that he had made on them One thing that's coming to me is it's such a beautiful foreword by Bob Berg, my friend Bob Berg, who's co-author of The Go-Giver.
What
Bob wrote is, he said, "Few people get to experience a mentor of the judge's caliber. He was a man whose actions truly reflected..." I was going to say, that's what I think of as judge. This is what I wanted to say. Here's what Bob said. "While reading Walking with Justice, you might discover, as I did, that you have found another mentor, Judge Rosen himself. Fortunately for us, his protege has done such a beautiful job of relating the lessons she learned from Judge that you'll be able to determine your best course of action in any given situation by referring back to the book you hold in your hands. If you have any question regarding how to live a good, productive, and righteous life, the answer lies somewhere in these pages. In fact, I would go so far as to say that Dr. Molly has written a timeless handbook for being human." Judge Rosen, I miss you. I only wish I'd had the honor of meeting you. And to Dr. Molly Marty, thank you for sharing your mentor with us. And so that, you know, I think Bob did such a great job of saying that that's really what Judge's life was about. It was about living a good and productive and righteous life through his example,
Amen.
Day in and day out.
Amen. And that's the righteous life we lead is our message to the world. And Bob Berg, that's an amazing testimonial for your book. For those who don't know Bob Berg, you should. You should go read The Go-Giver, first of all, but he's got lots of other amazing books. And so to have a friend like that and a testimonial like that should make most people just pick up Amazon and order the book like right away, because that's an amazing testimonial. And so now, also because of my wife, I'm familiar with the legal justice system a bit, and being a judge, you could get a lot of negativity in your life on a day-to-day basis. It must slant your view at times. How is he able to maintain such hope and positivity and be an example and a mentor to others when day-to-day the life of a judge can deal a lot in the negative?
Certainly, he was in a position to see the worst of humankind come before him the different types of crimes that came through our chambers. Judge had a way, I think, of focusing so strongly on the vision for people's potential and of holding, you know, space for that and believing that they would come back to that and step forward into that. And, you know, Judge had said, in times of great uncertainty and need, you will have doubts. Also have hopes, have dreams. And I think that really sums up Judge's perspective, is that he was a realist, and he could be with the facts as they were and what was going on and adjudicate in a fair and just way. But at the same time, he continually chose to re-embrace the potential and possibility of humankind.
Wow. And that's not easy to do. As you said, he faced day-to-day the worst of humankind. But if you can instill in anyone hope and a goal, a dream or goal, you really have steered them in a good direction. So now the book talks, you share 25 uncommon leadership lessons highlighted by not only stories from the judge's life, but of your mentorship with him as a young lawyer. Tell me maybe one of your favorite stories, and maybe share the top three or four leadership lessons, uncommon leadership lessons. I love uncommon. Share with us some of those.
Sure. One of the stories I really love, I was talking to someone else today about this story, and it's from when Judge was 5 years old. And so in this book, it's housed in the eulogies of his two sons. So you attend Judge Rosen's funeral, and you hear what his sons say about his life and his leadership and him being a father. And then we have flashbacks to different experiences that formed him or different times that he was mentoring me. And this one goes back, way back to when he was 5 years old, and then the book continues until Judge was 96 years old when he died. His mother was a great leader, I say in the book, and have a couple chapters about how he really learned how he wanted to live from his mother, and he learned some things he didn't want to do, ways he didn't want to treat others from his father. And this is one of those times where he was learning a lesson from his mother. And his mother would say to Judge and his brother, Harold, if anyone comes knocking on the door, you give them a dollar, no questions asked. You can't say that you are poor because there are always people who are in greater need than you. And so you just give them the money because you have an obligation to assist your fellow man. And so Judge was playing. He's 5 years old, and his aunt was in town, his mother's sister, who was actually known for her generous spirit. And his aunt said, you know, look out the window and see what's happening. And young Max ran to the window and looked out, and he saw this hobo from a nearby town out in the yard picking up his mother's clothespin. And this was a man that actually had knocked on the door a time or two, and he scared Judge a bit. He talked with a nasal tone, and Judge was kind of standing back and watching this. And the hobo came and he knocked on the door. And his mother answered the door, and he said, would you like to buy some clothespins today? And Judge's mother said, yes, I would. How much are they? And he said, well, I have 6 clothespins. That will be 50 cents. So Jenny said, wait a minute, I'll go get the change. And as she went to get the money, her sister vehemently opposed her decision and said, Jenny, why would you do such a thing? Have you lost your mind? Those are your clothespins. You're not going to buy your own clothespins. And Judge's mother just drew a line and said, no, that man needs our help and deserves our respect. If he wants to retain a little bit of dignity and sell me my clothespins, I'm not going to complain. I would have given him the money anyway. This way he has some dignity left, and I'm pleased to do it. So I think that's one of my favorite stories, just because Judge was the same way 90 years later. He would do anything to show that respect, to expand the dignity of a human. I never saw him turn away an opportunity, and he did this in such a quiet way, but he really was brilliant at making people, affirming people, making people feel good about who they are and what they did. Very similar to our friend Bob Berg, who we were just talking about. Bob is very good at that as well.
Wow, what a story. And if I'm going to give someone money, I appreciate someone even more. That is, as you said, they're retaining their dignity, they're learning a little sales lesson. What an amazing story, and what a positive, amazing thing for his mom to tell him. Anybody knocks on the door, just give him money. You never know how that can work out in this day and age. But what a tremendous story. Now, Jimmy, maybe 3 or 4 of the uncommon leadership lessons we learned from Judge and from you mentoring with the judge.
Certainly. One that is coming up, and maybe because we're talking about Bob, but Bob is sharing. I did an interview with him, and he shared these lessons, and I said, those need to go in this book because that's so consistent with Judge's leadership. But Bob shared that he was always asked as a young boy these 5 questions. 4 were from a Jewish sage and then 1 from his father. But these questions say, who is a rich person? One who rejoices in their lot. Who is wise? One who learns from all others. Who is mighty? One who can control their own emotions and make of any enemy a friend. Who is honored? One who honors others. Who is brave? One who is smart enough to be afraid and still do their job. So I really love that. At the end of every chapter, I sum up the lessons. And at the end of that one, the uncommon lesson says, your truest spiritual path will lead you to yourself, for it is devoted to becoming.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty amazing. Now, Dr. Molly, when your heart virus came upon you, that's quite a fall from being busy and involved with top-notch people in the world to fighting for your life. And at the same time, I always answer amazing when people ask how I'm doing. I'm not always amazing. I'm often in a lot of pain and tired from fighting pain. How were you able to still keep a positive attitude, to stay focused on your purpose and your goals when life hits like that? Because a lot of people, if something like that happens, they start asking, why me? And why me is not going to get you to a positive impact on the world. You got to start asking for myself questions like, how can I use this to help encourage other people, either going through the same thing or other people that have their own challenges?
Mm-hmm. One of the 25 uncommon lessons in the book, one of them reads, your value lies not in status or title, but in the roots of your character and the depth of your compassion. And that is what's coming up to me now, that even when all of that worldly esteem went away, and I didn't know if it would be forever or not, but certainly being bedridden, giving up my practice as it was, my consulting company, and a lot of that fell away. And I still could make that choice of using that experience to develop my character and to choose compassion, self-compassion, and which sometimes is the hardest, and compassion for others, and compassion for my children who were going through that, and my husband, and my friends, and my family, and all the people that were gathering around me to help me as well. So I think that that's one of the lessons to take away from that.
Exactly. Now, how your life was before, you're pretty self-reliant, pretty good at, accomplishing things. And what I've found hard when I was young, which I've totally changed my tune on, was accepting help from other people. Like when you're used to proudly being independent and self-sufficient and you need people to help you get dressed, to make food and serve you food, to visit you in hospital. When I was young, that was so difficult. But now, later in life, I realize that the people that love you love to help you. And if you deprive them of the opportunity of helping you, you're doing both of you a disservice.
Very well said.
Did you come across the same thing? Was it hard for you? Here you are, speaker and mentor and author and all these things, and now you're having to have maybe people like your kids bring you food or help you do simple things.
Yeah, very much. I was fortunate. You talked about the go-giver, and that's the fifth of his laws, is that law of reciprocity, I think he calls it, or receptivity, I guess it is, receptivity. Because people do have a hard time receiving. And so Bob writes so beautifully, Bob and John David Mann, in their book, The Go-Giver, about when you don't receive, how you are depriving others of giving. And we all know how good it feels to give. And so that really is a good way to expand your perspective on that. In revisiting Judge's life and going through that challenge, another of the uncommon lessons that I include, and it's very different than the words that would have come out of my mouth for the first 15, 20 years of my career. But I write that your greatest path of influence is love. And that's something that would have sounded very touchy-feely to me. but that's one thing that I discovered. It's that giving and that receiving of love that truly is the foundation of your influence.
Exactly. And people can see through people, a lot of people. So if it's genuine, if it's compassionate and caring, and you do have the other person's best interest at heart, and you're always looking to go the extra mile, those things make a huge, huge difference in life. And learning to rely on letting other people help you and even asking for help. Tough one. I remember when I was young, a friend of my sister's in high school said, well, it looks like Tom has a lot of problems going up and down stairs. Should I offer to help him? My sister said, please don't, because he's so proud. He'll go back up those stairs and come down on his own just to show you that he can do it. So you're really creating more work for him. Maybe that's nice to be stubborn to get through things, but when it's stubborn to not allow people to help you, you're really impeding the love that people give you and the love you feel when other people have.
And you truly never know. Another thing I've experienced again through that illness, and then certainly since this book has been into the world and my work in the community, is you never, ever know the impact that you make on another person. And so it can be in those moments, or it will be in those moments of connection, when you're truly opening yourself up to receive, when you're giving openly with that compassion and love yourself, that you connect in a way that, you know, some magic happens. Some, you know, as a psychologist, I would say there's heightened emotion, and so the memory is coded on a deeper level. And, you know, you can explain this stuff with science as well. But
yeah,
people have come back to me so many times from those moments where I thought I was on the receiving end, and they'll say, you know, what you said when we were together and I was helping you do this, what you said just stuck with me. And then they tell me the changes they've made in their life or what they're doing different. And so it would be in moments where I thought, you know, okay, I just need to receive. And it ended up that through that connection, I also was giving. I just wasn't as aware of it at the time.
Wow. And another thing that comes to my mind with the resiliency project, and youth suicide, I think that if you open up to youth that you're mentoring or even that you deal with appropriately and talk about the challenges that you faced in life and even maybe your own similar thoughts of a suicide, because I believe if you open yourself up like that, using your thoughts and your life as a lesson, I really believe you cement a bond with a young person or youth, because they may just look at someone and say, ooh, they have this car and they live in this house, and so they must be, you know, successful all their lives. But if you really get one-on-one with young people, you share, and this is what I found powerful in small groups, when you share what you're thinking, youth will understand that they're not the only person who thought this way, that many, many people think that way. And so that is an amazing thing, opening up your life and the challenges you faced and the thoughts you had to share with someone young. You think that's a valid point, Dr. Mom?
Oh, it's extremely valid, Tom. And we have a speaker, for example, coming to help kick off the You Matter, We Need You campaign at our high school. And it's also part of one of the two parents that lost a child to suicide have endowed a memorial fund, and they want to help continue this message of resiliency and growing, you know, through adversity, and they're just tremendous people. And so the first speaker is coming, Jennifer Loudon, is from Washington State, and Jennifer just shows up that way to kind of create a safe space, but she speaks from the heart, and she's going to be sharing how she was depressed in high school and how she just tried to numb the pain initially with, you know, drinking and smoking and just trying to numb that pain, and how she continued to grow through realizing that she wasn't just being this fun party person, but that she actually had so much underneath to deal with and the ways that she dealt with that. And I think, you know, why Jennifer came to mind, I think, is in describing her to people who don't know her, I said, I believe that to touch hearts, you need to come from the heart. And that's how she is. She's just open. She's honest. She'll share what is and share her experience. And I think that that is exactly how you reach not only youth, but that we as humans are wired for that connection. And that is the only way to really be vulnerable and to be open and honest and disclose something that feels really scary, but that it can help it in a tremendous way.
It can help so much in a tremendous way, and I've been given that advice, and I think maybe people who share a story like ours, someone told me, just speak from the heart. They saw me speak once, and then they saw me speak another time with a PowerPoint, and they say, when you're touching the heart, forget the PowerPoint, just share. And another thing I've learned is that, like, if I thought I would be encouraging others by speaking about my arthritis, you told me that 25 years ago, and I'm in my early 20s trying to be the next Warren Buffett or world's greatest real estate investor, I would have been pissed to say that, yeah, I'm spending the same audience with my story about living with arthritis possibly. I would have been like, oh, I don't like talking about that. I don't talk about it to my friends and my family, and the more I talk about it, the more it upsets me. So sometimes you have to take these things that you've experienced in life, even the thoughts of depression, because, boy, I bet if you interviewed 100 adults, you probably know the statistics about what percentage of people think of suicide. it's huge. And so if young people knew this, they knew how this person got through it, and now they see them as a mentor or a successful person, that's going to connect in their brain and in their heart as well.
Very true.
Wow. And so, and you mentioned earlier as well, you really don't ever know exactly, you know, if you save or help one youth, you have affected their family, you've affected their future spouse, their future kids, you've affected so many people around that child. Hearing some of these stories you hear must be worth more than one.
It certainly is. And, you know, like I said, when I was young, and you can tell from all the degrees in education, there are certain paths I could take in my life and be bringing home the buku bucks. And it's just not, you know, it's been a journey of, you know, certainly providing for a family, but it's just been a journey of really listening to what I'm being called to do. And, you know, when I read those words that day and saw that I needed to help in this community work, you know, I have a friend, Frank McKinney, who calls that the tap, those moments that, you know, we always are being spoken to, and often those are whispers, and you need to be still to hear them. But the blessings that come from saying, okay, I'm being tapped to do this, I'm being called to do this, however you want to think of that, and you say yes and just boldly walk forward, not knowing where it's going to go or who you're going to help. It's been a tremendous, tremendous journey for me.
Exactly. Probably the biggest thing in my whole life has been writing down and determining my God-given definite purpose. What you're called for, as you said. And once you have that, once you really know what you're created, what you're called to be, it's very little that can stop you. That's really the starting point of it all. And you had to go through some adversity, some physical challenges to kind of put the final pieces into place. Maybe God is just saying, okay, you're really focused on this part, doing so well, but now let's just see how you can learn these last few points. And I think you've really taken that experience, the physical challenge you had, almost dying, and you've been able to add the pieces maybe that were missing, right, from before when it was performance psychology, all of those success, right?
Yes, and one of the, you know, I go back to those uncommon lessons, the way I phrased it, and the one that is coming up to me now, I wrote, a noble leader, because that's what Judge was, a noble leader answers not to the trumpet calls of self-promotion, but to the hushed whispers of necessity.
Oof. Wow.
How I phrased that lesson, that it's just that process of being still, still with yourself, with your circumstances, and looking with fresh eyes at who is right in front of you that needs help, and just whispering for those taps or listening for those whispers or taps and say, oh, I'm supposed to help here. Oh, I need to do this, and just take that step. And it's a process of trusting and serving, and that's really the story of Walking with Justice.
Exactly. In a process of applied faith as well, you get called to do something, you got to put applied faith into action to actually do it. And so that's another part of it, is the applied faith to go do it. And you've done an amazing job with this book. What a memorial, what a testimonial, actually probably a better word is a legacy for Judge Rosen. For you to write this book, share the great principles. He's already impacted thousands of people, but this book will allow him to live on, and his legacy and his lessons to impact even more people. And so what a tremendous gift to Judge Rosen, but a tremendous gift he lived in advance already with his life, right?
Yes, and I use that word legacy because that was one of the lessons of Judge's life to me. Is I had said that Judge's life stands as a reminder that each day we write our eulogy. We continue shaping our legacy until our final day. It is in the choices we make, in the little things when no one is watching, that set our course. We can choose good or evil, love or hatred, generosity or selfishness. And so I write about Judge's legacy because, like I said, he was a man so influential. I attended a lot of dedications to him. I saw not only the courthouse being dedicated to him, but a law library and a portrait and another law library. And
wow.
He had a lot of, you know, while he was alive, he had what I called living eulogies. But it really is the impact that he made. That was his true legacy, his mentorship to all of these young lawyers who came through his chambers. And many of those are now deans of law schools. They're partners in prestigious law firms. There's CEOs of many are multi-million. There's a billion-dollar company. The CEO of IMAX
wow.
Theaters is one of my co-clerks who was
wow.
mentored by Judge Rosen. So there are some tremendous servant leaders out there. And so Rich Gelfond is an example, the head of IMAX, when we had the tragedy in Colorado at the movie theater, he immediately stepped forward because he has Judge's picture on his desk, and he looks to that picture as I do and say, Judge, what would you do? You know, what do you think I should do? And he knew the right thing was to make a contribution and start some work around bringing healing to the movie industry. And so there are many, many others. I wrote the book, but the book is dedicated to all of my co-clerks, and I write it with such, I wrote it with such love and respect for all of them, because we all kind of came to study by the side of this master, and his mentorship runs through our lives in different ways, but it certainly runs through all of them with this tapestry of a well-lived life. What does that look like, a well-lived
wow.
life?
And to create a well-lived life, as you alluded to earlier, it has to be lived moment by moment, and the choice is yours. We always have only 100% control over one thing only, that's our thoughts, which will direct our actions. So we have the choice to choose the right thoughts, which will lead to the right actions today, every day, and if you live a long life, that's a long time to do it. But if you can make those daily choices, it creates a legacy that lives on past you, right?
Yes, it does. And in my paradigm, I think I split those up into two pieces where I say thrive and serve, because I saw Judge do both, and I've tried to do both, and I have daily practices to support those. I think that that's the only way to do that is to create that environment that helps keep you on the right track, and when you get off, to get you back on sooner than if you didn't have those practices. So I think of it as making choices that rejuvenate us. I talk about in the book how Judge was a master of rejuvenation, and all of those little choices he made right day in and day out that created so much energy where he could do what he did to have the impact and influence. And so it's about thriving. And, of course, I have some experiences in recovering from my challenges and what I do now to stay vibrant and healthy. And then serving. And that was the other piece that just ran to Judge's core. And admittedly, it runs to my core, walking out in service to others. And so I think that there's a lot of choices and practices that you need to support both thriving and serving on a daily basis.
Amen. And the only thing I would change is I would put serve and thrive rather than to thrive and serve. I would start it with serve. If you serve, you will thrive. That's just the law of going the extra mile, and the universe just rewards you as long as you're doing it for the right purposes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah,
Thank you so much.
Well, I was just going to say, I see a lot of wonderful servants, and they wear themselves down. I saw a great quote the other day out on Twitter, and I'll paraphrase it, but Mark Silver, a friend of mine, had written something, and the Community Resiliency Project had retweeted it, but he wrote about if you throw yourself into helping someone in an effort to save them or save yourself, you won't be able to accomplish what you want. And I thought that was so wise, that you really need to take that perspective and that step back and get centered and come from a place of strength and of sharing that addition that you're making and creating in your life. Because for years as a performance psychologist, I did see a lot of people whose well had run dry. I think that with my own cardiac virus, I set myself up. I had two books out that year. I was speaking, I was traveling, I was coaching. I was burning the candle at both ends more than I had. And, so that's where I think I mean, I certainly understand the serving and thriving, thriving and serving, they go hand in hand. But I just wanted to mention that I think it's so important to serve from a place of strength, serve from a place of not losing yourself, but of expanding and becoming more for yourself and for others.
Exactly. Now, where can people get the book? Is it Amazon, website? What is the best way to get Walking with Jesse?
Yes, the book's available anywhere books are available. We have a website, walkingwithjustice.com, that has direct links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and CEO or 800 CEO Books and all of those places. And you can go to your local bookstore, and if they don't have it, you can order it. Go to your library, and if they don't have it, they can order it. And so it's available anywhere, walkingwithjustice.com. And then I'm available at Dr. Molly, DrMolly, drmolly.com. I write, I have a success mindset resource there, and I write my musings every couple weeks, and so you can opt in there if you want to just stay part of that conversation. And as we mentioned earlier, the project is at crproject.org, our Community Resiliency Project. Is it
Project? Okay, so crproject.org.
Yes, it's also at communityresiliencyproject.org, but it's easier for people to just get redirected, I think, from crproject.org.
Yeah, easier in this day and age to remember something simple like that. crproject.org. I'll be putting it on the website as well. And if you're in a community that needs this kind of resiliency, boy, they should certainly contact you. Thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Molly. What an interesting book. What an interesting person that you mentored under. And I love the parts that your health challenges have added to your teaching and your speaking and all the different things you do. Wish you didn't have to go through it, but you have certainly learned from adversity and defeat and really refined your thinking so that it's going to make a huge impact on the world, and your Community Resiliency Project is going to save a lot of lives. So congratulations. Thank you so much for the amazing work you do, and have an amazing day.
Thanks, Tom.